And right now, the ongoing violence in Darfur. Governor Bill Richardson of New Mexico returned a week ago from his trip to Sudan. There he met Sudanese President Omar Hassan al-Bashir and visited refugee camps in the war-torn Darfur region. During the trip, Richardson and the Sudanese government announced that they had negotiated a 60-day ceasefire. That's between the government and three rebel groups. One militia group has since bowed out, and reports indicate that fighting continues in Darfur. If you have questions for Governor Richardson about his experience in Sudan and his push for a ceasefire, give us a call, 800-989-8255. Email is talk@npr.org. Joining us now from his office in Santa Fe, New Mexico, is Governor Richardson. Governor, welcome back. And
Good to talk with you again. Thank you. Nice to be with you again.
You announced a 60-day ceasefire last week. The situation remains dire. I don't think that you're one of those who believes that this is some sort of a magic remedy.
Well, it's not a magic remedy, but it is an important step forward. I've had a chance in the last few days to talk to Andrew Natsios, who's the president's special envoy to Darfur, and Ambassador Cameron Hume, our American ambassador in the Sudan. And they're both working it. They're working the rebels, pushing them to get that third rebel group to agree to the ceasefire. And then March 15th, a peace conference of all the groups. The government, the three rebel groups, you know, this is a huge country. There's carnage going on. There's deaths, rapes. But I do think there's been a lessening of hostilities. And if we can get that third rebel group, which directly told me they would agree to it, but they're so fragmented. There's so many different chiefs and bosses there. They got the political side, the fighters, and so they don't talk to each other. But Ambassador Hume, and to the credit of Andrew Natsios, he's out on the Chad border helping out, trying to be a peacemaker, and I appreciate that. Here's where we have the State Department, the Republican administration, and a Democrat, and I must say the Save Darfur Coalition, they paid for the trip. They did a great job to join a humanitarian effort to make things happen.
And I have to say, just to anticipate a phone call, it sounds like you were working with the knowledge of the State Department. This wasn't private diplomacy.
That's right. It wasn't freelancing, but it was a private citizen trip, the Save Darfur Coalition. It's got 800 members. They've done a great job around the country to raise awareness of the dire situation in Darfur. They were members of the delegation. They helped push Bashir, the rebels. They were right there helping with humanitarian workers getting more access. And I think what we were able to do in addition to the strong effort with the ceasefire is we got President Bashir to agree to not paint some of the aircraft white so it looks like white humanitarian aircraft, which is important in a war situation. He agreed to help with increasing security for humanitarian groups, expedite visas for humanitarian workers, do something about the huge sexual violence that's happening there. You know, these are little steps forward in a very dire situation, but the Save Darfur Coalition did terrific work, and I want to commend them because they stepped into the policy side, and we got something done.
At the same time, President Bashir has not been noted himself for sticking to agreements.
That's right, and I realize that. There have been so many broken agreements, ceasefires. The devastation continues. You're talking about an area that has had 300,000 deaths among the warring factions, 2.5 human beings displaced. But there is a little bit of a lull in the fighting. They're still doing it, but if we have the government agreeing to a ceasefire and we get all the rebel groups, now the United Nations, which is the official mediator, not me, not the Save Darfur, they have a very effective special envoy there, Jan Eliasson, a former foreign minister of Sweden, and the African Unity, Salim Salim. They're out there trying to get everybody together to make this March 15th deadline the 60 days, but in the meantime, try to set up a process where the government and the rebels can reach agreement on just governance, on human rights issues, but most importantly, a ceasefire to stop the carnage, which is one of the worst in the world.
We're speaking with Bill Richardson, the governor of New Mexico, formerly the United States ambassador to the United Nations, about his trip to Darfur and his trip to Sudan to negotiate a ceasefire there. If you'd like to join us, 800-989-8255. Email is talk@npr.org. And John is with us. John on the line from Ithaca, New York.
Yes.
Go ahead, John.
Governor Richardson, I'd like to ask you if, in fact, in your talks with President Bashir, he admitted that his government has funded, supported, and cooperated with the Janjaweed militias, which are causing most of the damage and most of the genocidal action. As he admitted that publicly, because if he won't do that, how can he guarantee any kind of a ceasefire would have any meaning?
Well, he indirectly did say that that was the case. Here's how. The prepared joint statement that Bashir and I agreed on says that he will cease funding military groups, including the Janjaweed. Now, he wanted to keep that out of the document, but I said, look, everybody knows that these are killers, they're bad people, you got to control them. And I think he was in a spirit of recognizing that he was in enormous international pressure. The Save Darfur Coalition has done a lot of damage to his credibility, and obviously for good reason. But, yeah, I think is he going to totally stop it? Remains to be seen. But he did recognize that it was a serious problem. And these are militias. They go on horses. They have no kind of oversight of them. They pillage. They burn. They loot. I mean, I met refugees that they flat out told me they had just entered the refugee camp because the Janjaweed had completely burned their villages and killed their husbands. And it's just something that requires more international attention. The world has to be more engaged in this crisis. I mean, we're obviously preoccupied with Iraq and North Korea and the Middle East, but what about Africa? There are hundreds of human beings there getting killed, and I just hope America gets more active, and even the Bush administration to stop this huge tragedy. But I think we made a small dent, and it's up to others now to follow through, like the United Nations and the African Union.
Did you talk to Andrew Natsios when he was there?
He asked and answered.
Yes, I did talk to Special Envoy Natsios both before and after. We've had at least four or five conversations. He sent me memos. He's working very hard. He deserves credit, too, for like maybe shaping the potential pressure that the U.S. government could bring and the European Union. So our mission was helped by that. So we're working closely, but we're not official agents of the government. It's the Bush administration, the State Department, our ambassador there, Natsios. But I have to tell you, I believe he's very, very engaged, and I hope he gets all the resources and support he needs from the administration.
John, thanks very much.
Thank you.
The International Crisis Group said today there was a complaint that this ceasefire is, quote, simply playing into the hands of the government of Sudan. Did you worry about the prospect that you were just getting played for time on an agreement that the government really has no intention of sticking to?
Well, you know, there have been about two ceasefires, three ceasefires, and it takes basically two to tango. You can't just say the government has to observe it. It's the government and the rebels. And what I think is important is that we'd set forth a structure that leads to a March 15th, this was also in our statement, a March 15th peace agreement that the government and the three rebel groups observe. Now, two of the three rebel groups have said they're going to not violate the ceasefire. The government says they won't either. One of the rebel groups is objecting. So until we get all parties involved, it's not going to be a better situation. But I do think that while not all of the ceasefire has been perfect, there has been a lessening of violence. And I do believe that international pressure has gotten to Bashir. But, you know, there's groups like that and others that would rather sit in their armchairs and just say, my God, this is terrible. But we got to fix things. You got to fix things. You got to go in there and meet with the rebels and pressure them and get engaged. You know, there are a lot of armchair quarterbacks. Admittedly, this is not a perfect ceasefire, but I think for the first time, there's hope on all sides. And You've got the UN there, the African Union fighting hard. You've got the Safe Darfur people. They're increasing their pressure, and that's good. You've got the international community, the Congress, having hearings. So I think we had a valuable service.
One of the things I know you'd hope to do, you mentioned the African Union there, about a few thousand troops there, and I know that you spoke with their commander, and he's told you, as he's told everybody else who asks, he doesn't have enough men to begin to enforce, and in fact, he doesn't even have the mandate to really enforce peace efforts in that part of Darfur. One of your goals was to convince President Bashir to allow a United Nations force with greater authority into the area, and he refused to do that.
He did, but we moved them forward a little bit. Here's how. He had previously said no UN troops, but I think through the pressure of Andrew Natsios, the administration, and others, he did open the door a little bit and said he'd be willing to allow UN troops with blue helmets as long as they were logistics administrative. Now, that's a start, and I think he's going to realize that we're looking at about 20,000 troops that are going to be needed for peacekeeping. They're not going to be enough African Union troops because they're going to be in Somalia. There are other parts of Africa. They're not that well-trained, poorly equipped. I think he's going to realize to have a real enforceable peace, which he is going to need just for his own domestic reasons and survival, that he will have a UN peacekeeping presence. Now, the Secretary General of the UN, Ban Ki-moon, is going to be in Africa in late January, and he's going to meet with Bashir. So we keep moving him forward. We keep pushing. And because of this continued pressure, Bashir is opening the door a little bit. Admittedly, he is resisting, but if we can push him, keep pressure on, the worst thing we can do is give up and say, this is not going to happen, this is hopeless. You got to have sustained international pressure. Get China involved. It's a big client of Sudan's oil, and Andrew Natsios was out in China getting the Chinese more engaged. So this advances step by step, and I think eventually he's going to recognize that he needs those UN troops.
We're speaking with Governor Bill Richardson of New Mexico in his office in Santa Fe, and you're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And let's get another caller in. This is Naweed. Naweed is with us from Fremont in California.
Thank you, Neil, for taking my call.
Sure.
I just had a question in regards to the African Union mandate. As I understand it, right now the only thing that the African Union can do is basically take notice of an embreachment happening within the ceasefire. Basically, take notes. They cannot fight against the militia. Is there any chance of change of getting the mandate to change, whereas they can literally enforce the ceasefire, as in fight against the militias that are basically
in violation of the ceasefire? Okay, Governor Richardson.
Yeah, that's an excellent suggestion because right now, we met with a lot of African Union troops, and they told us, look, we're undermanned. The rules of engagement don't permit us to do a lot of work. I also heard complaints in refugee camps. They said, well, you know, the African Union is supposed to protect us and control the areas, and they're not doing it. So clearly, we've got to get the African Union to get better rules of engagement, more engaged. As I said, they're trying, but they don't have the equipment. They don't have the numbers, and just simply to get a peacekeeping force anyway. I was ambassador at the UN. It takes months just to deploy people there, train them, give them ammunition. And the African Union, there's not a sufficient number. So this is what needs to be discussed during the ceasefire.
Mm-hmm.
This peace agreement that by the 15th of March, the government and the rebels engage in. The rebels told me, look, we're ready to do a ceasefire, but at this peace conference that you want, March 15th, we got to talk about compensation. We want compensation from the government. We want territorial integrity. We want all kinds of other assurances. And so those are things that legitimately need to be negotiated, and this is why I believe having the ceasefire short term, even though we didn't get the UN troops, which is going to, even if Bashir said yes on UN troops, it's going to take 3 to 6 months.
Yep. Let's see if we get one more caller in. David. David with us from Charlotte, North Carolina. Hello, David. David has apparently left us. Let's go then with Michael. Michael with us from Jacksonville in Florida.
Yes, I was just curious. It seems like there's a trend recently for politicians of all veneers to get involved with international politics. And how does the time that you're spending on this subject detract from the time that you should be spending on your constituents in your own state? I'll take my answers on the air.
All right, Michael. Thanks very much.
Well, that's I think some of my constituents asked that, but this was a compelling humanitarian case. The Save Darfur Coalition approached me because I'd been able to get a New Mexico reporter out of the Sudan about 4 months ago. I just make it very clear. I've had international experience. I've gotten involved with the North Korea issue. Foreign policy is a love of mine. And so when I'm asked to rescue somebody or try to bring peace somewhere in an area of expertise, I'll get engaged. And my constituents, by the way, they generally support this because it's an international humanitarian issue. I was gone 3 days. I came back, was sworn in as governor, was inaugurated, gave my State of the State address. But I think if any way you can help your fellow man in a small way, and, you know, I'm not a government. I'm just a human being who was asked to help because I knew the president of Sudan, and I'd gotten 3 Red Cross workers out of Sudan 10 years ago, rescued them. They're back home. A reporter, a Chicago Tribune Pulitzer Prize-winning reporter who was jailed for allegedly spying. I said, Bashir, let him go. This is not smart. And he let him go. And now this peace agreement and this ceasefire, it's not perfect. But, you know, maybe it's going to work. But everybody's got to stay working on it.
Governor Richardson, thank you so much for your time today. We appreciate it.
Thank you.
Bill Richardson, governor of New Mexico. He's announced that he will announce whether he plans to run for president of the United States or not by the end of this month. He joined us today from his office at his capital in Santa Fe. I'm Neil Conan. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News.